Hello, y'all.
This is Scott Merrick from the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach with this week's episode of Snacks for the Brain. This is episode number 32. Dig in, as you will, as I go through and grab some snippets from earlier podcasts just to give those of you who may have joined recently some notion of what's there before. You know, it's a cliche that if you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. Think of today as meta snacks. Snacks from the snacks. This is it. Enjoy.
Feel free to go back and download any of the earlier episodes most easily by clicking the feed link in the left-hand sidebar of
snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com. Let's get right down to it.
Let's get right down to it.
Let's get right down to it.
Let's, shall we? I'll tell you, for this exercise, I just literally went out into my storage folders in my archives on my computer and plopped down on a couple of folders and opened up earlier episodes, and they're just numbered, so I didn't really know what they were, but as luck will have it, and it will, I randomly chose four of my favorite interviews from the past. One of them, the first one I'm going to share with you, is Louise Rollins Smith, the Frog's HIV Connection. My conversation with Dr. Rollins Smith was so interesting that I split it into two snacks for the brains, episode 13 and episode 14. This is an excerpt from episode 14, in which I asked her, how did you get into science in the very first place?
I think I was encouraged in high school by a science teacher who, you know, science was one of my favorite subjects, biology was my favorite subject, and she encouraged me to become a physician, was her thought about the best way to pursue science. And so I think I, you know, was following that path toward science, maybe toward medicine. And somewhere along the way, you know, it became much more interesting to find out about research, to be on the forefront of discovering new things, things that no one has found before. And I think that's kind of how people get drawn in. That's probably how I came to be a scientist.
Just the lure of the person on the forward edge, I guess. The explorer and the inventor and the discoverer.
Right. It's really exciting to be the first person to learn something new. Regardless of whether it's a little discovery or a big discovery, it's very satisfying to be the first to find this out and know that you can tell other people and they'll get excited about it too.
So you don't come into your work bored very often, right?
No. We usually have many more questions than we can really attack, so we kind of have to keep prioritizing. There are all these directions we'd like to go. We have to keep choosing which ones we're going to.
The next snippet I'd like to share with you is from Dr. William Schaffner's interview, episode 17. Bill Schaffner is chair of the Department of Preventative Medicine at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Very lucky to get a few minutes with him. He's very, very busy. I met up with him in his office at the medical center to talk about the media buzz around the bird flu. We had a productive conversation, and I certainly learned something. Listen up to Dr. William Schaffner from Snacks for the Brain, episode 17.
Well, the question all the listeners, I'm sure, will really want to hear, is there going to be a bird flu pandemic?
Let's see, where's that crystal ball? Most people who know about influenza know that periodically this virus, which is capable of changing itself, it can change itself genetically, from time to time produces a dramatically new influenza type. And when that happens, the world's population is completely susceptible and we have a global epidemic, which we call a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Now, that happened three times in the 20th century. In 1918, that was the worst. Then again in 1957 and in 1968. So it's been almost 40 years since the last one, and most influenza experts think that, well, I guess we're more or less due, the clock is ticking. But the pandemics don't run according to a Swiss train schedule. They'll come when an appropriate mutation takes place. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's that random, why are we fretting now? And we're fretting now because the previous new influenza viruses originated from influenza viruses that affected only birds originally. Mm-hmm. And it was their genetic changes that resulted in a new human virus.
So in a sense, they were all bird flus.
That's exactly right. They were all. Bird flu is the mother of us all.
Let's go way, way back to episode number 11 of Snacks for the Brain. In this episode, I interviewed Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach Associate Director Vicki Metzger, and we had a wonderful little chat about what she does at the Center for Science Outreach. And at about midpoint in our conversation, she focused on one of her favorite aspects of her job, the summer science camps for children.
K-12 education, I love the camps. I love the girls in science and the boys exploring science and technology camps. I love to go see kids doing science and having a great time and enjoying themselves and being around kids like them, because so often in schools when you teach, those kinds of kids kind of get lost in the shuffle of more cultural issues that are not related to science. And so it's really great to see a confluence of all those kids in one place. And the teachers that teach the science camps are just so kid-friendly, and it's so much fun. I just kind of want to go back and be a kid myself again.
Yeah, that's along the same theme of a conversation I had with Vanderbilt Dyer Observatory Director Rick Chappell several months ago. He was bemoaning the fact that there are all kinds of after-school programs out there. There's sports, and there's scouts, and there's social things going on. There's very little out there in the way of science. And, for those kids who are interested in science, there's no outlet for them.
Yeah.
So the summer camps, I guess, sort of offer that.
Well, that's the start. But I really think that we are trying to make the effort to include kids in science outside the regular K-12 school day. One of the interesting things that's going on here is a program we have called the Research Internship Program, and it's for high school kids. I think they have to be older than 16 for liability reasons, but
right.
We do bring kids in who are high school students and try to match them up with people in research labs if they're really interested in doing science.
Really neat. That goes on during the academic school year?
Yeah, and summertime too, and actually there's a link on our website to the research internship program, so anybody who's interested can check that out on the website. And Dr. Glenn McCombs, who's another associate director here, oversees that program. But it's just another opportunity for real people to be put in touch with real scientists, to do real science, and to kind of feed that real innate desire I think that everybody has to do science.
Wonderful. And again, that website is www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO. Check that out anytime for any of the offerings that we have here at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach.
And if there...
Oh, here comes Glenn McCombs. Say hi, Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
We'll talk to him next week.
Hi, Glenn.
And if there are teachers who are sort of like me, who are sort of overgrown kids, and they're, even though they might be teaching now, there's also a program that's called the Research Experience for Teachers that we do have occasionally some opportunities for teachers to come back into labs too. Those are not ongoing programs, so they might be a little bit more spotty, but we're trying to build that capacity into our office as well. So as the office grows and as we begin to offer more programs, I would also encourage those teachers who have that burning desire in their heart to do science, to do real science in a laboratory, to continue to check the website also.
For my last share of the day, I present a snippet from Snacks for the Brain episode 16 with Dr. Kayvon Stassen, who's worked to encourage students of minority descent to pursue careers in the sciences, particularly in physics and astronomy, is positively inspirational. We talk about his Scopes for Schools project and get a little bit into the pedagogy involved, and I hope you enjoy this little excerpt.
As a teacher in the elementary setting, I know firsthand that a lot of, especially early elementary, and elementary level teachers are sort of expected to be experts in everything. If they've got a self-contained classroom, they may be needing to teach science, teach space, but may not really have the background to do it, so you're providing a valuable service there.
Well, and kids are so universally responsive to the subject of outer space and of astronomy, really at all age levels. But, one of the things that we have been learning from research that's been done over the past couple of decades that compares grade school students in the United States to their counterparts in other first world nations around the world, is that our kids start out very competitive, in fact, by many measures, in the lead when they're very young, and that lead begins to slip more and more as they get older. And it seems to be that there's something about the way that we teach science in this country when kids are very young that is very right. something about the very discovery-oriented nature of how we teach science when kids are in second grade.
Absolutely.
Really taps into the way that kids want to and most naturally are able to learn. And we increasingly do something less and less right. And that of course, is not to to impugn the teachers who have the courage to get up every day and teach those kids who increasingly become harder and harder to teach. But one of the things we've been trying to do with Sculpture Schools is to empower teachers at the middle and high school levels with some content, with some pedagogy, and most importantly, with some tools and resources to be able to maintain that discovery-oriented approach to learning when the kids seem to need it most.
The pedagogical approach seems to really shift in middle school and high school in most settings, especially in today's age of teaching to the test, when you know the huge accountability issue is so important that teachers often feel they don't have time for inquiry-based learning. So
yeah.
How would you respond to that?
I started the Sculpture Schools program when I was a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and one of the teachers that I worked with then, if I remember correctly, said this wonderful thing about teaching to the test versus discovery-oriented teaching and learning. He said, Wisconsin is traditionally a farming state, and he said, there's this great farming expression, which is that you don't fatten a pig by weighing it. And obviously testing and accountability has its place, but those ought to be separate questions from how one ideally would conduct pedagogy. And too often, I think we confuse theories of testing with theories of pedagogy.
Thank you, very nicely put.
And so we really try to bring that, back squarely within the realm of how do we tap into the kids' natural curiosity for the universe and their penchant for learning actively. And do that in a way that provides teachers with the resources they need to do that. So we build telescopes with teachers and their kids. These then become telescopes that the teachers get to keep and use in their classrooms. We provide curriculum activities and ongoing connection with professional scientists and amateur astronomers. Really try to sort of do the village approach to teaching.
Well, that's it for today's Snacks for the Brain. Thank you all for listening, as always. Tell all your friends, especially if they're teachers, especially if they're interested in the future of science here in the United States of America. As always, check the website at www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO for more of what the fine folks at Vanderbilt University Center for Science Outreach are doing to connect working research scientists with students in K-12 classrooms worldwide.
The music for today's podcast is provided by Pod Show Pod State Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.
See ya!